I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. And I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. The average cost for a wedding in the United States in 2018 is $33,391. And don't get me wrong, I've had some friends and people I know who spent way more than $33,000 on their wedding. Like, such crazy amounts of money that, I mean, there's nothing you can do but just shake your head. And of course, the money expert in me is thinking of all of the amazing things that you could actually do or buy with that money. I mean, it is just like a 5 to 7 hour party, right? Don't most people know that? I mean, don't get me wrong. A wedding is amazing. It is hopefully one of the very best days of your lives when you do get married, but it's pretty much a party. I'm Shauna Compton-Game. This is Millennial Money. And today we're talking Saying I Do, Wedding Do's and Don'ts with Bridechilla podcast host Alicia McCormick.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton-Game. It will expand your brain.
So we're starting off with a great Ask Shauna question. This one comes from Megan. Megan says, "Hi Shauna, my husband and I are planning to buy a house and a second car, planning to finance the car with a 0% interest loan. Is there a recommended order for these purchases? Our thought is to finance the car first before the mortgage. We have paid off student loans and have no outstanding debt. We pay our credit cards in full each month. Thanks so much." Great question, Megan, and congrats on being debt-free. I know that that must feel amazing. So congrats on that and for buying your first house. It sounds like you're definitely on the up and up with your finances. So hopefully I can give you a little guidance here. Although I would tell you and any of you listening who are in the same position, really starting off working with a mortgage broker before you start shopping for your first home or your second or your third home is a really good idea because the mortgage broker is able to give you the most educated response to questions like this because they're looking at your entire financial picture in order to come up with that number or that range of how much house you can actually afford. So that's their job, and they're going to be able to better guide you. And one of the reasons I say this is because part of your mortgage application is something called your debt-to-income ratio. And although your debt-to-income is very healthy based off of what you're telling me, you got no debt, you got no student loans, no credit card debt, et cetera, you should theoretically, based off that information, be in such a good position to buy a house. Just so you know, the DTI, as it's called, or debt-to-income ratio, it's a ratio of what you earn to what you owe, and you want to keep it to 36% or less of your gross monthly income. Anything below 20% is considered completely excellent, and you probably have the most amazing DTI because you don't have any debt. But the DTI ratio includes all sorts of payments, such as your car payment, student loans, credit cards, all sorts of things. So for that reason, I'd really suggest waiting to buy the car for now until you talk with the mortgage broker. In my experience, and when I bought my first house, it was really the mortgage broker who said to me, you know, don't buy anything. Don't buy a new refrigerator. Don't take out, you know, 12-month 0% loan on anything, even if you think like, okay, this is like a $300 purchase. It's not that big of a deal. But what happens is when they're factoring all these numbers and they're factoring your range, and then specifically if you're already in contract under a property and you start going out and buying cars or, you know, even the less expensive things on credit or opening new credit accounts, it can mess up that mortgage application with the particular lender. And some lenders are better for, you know, certain DTIs than other lenders. So, you know, your mortgage broker is supposed to be the most educated, helping guide you in that process. And so, you know, even if you're buying your car on 0% interest, that's fabulous and amazing and wonderful for you, but you're still borrowing however much money it is for that particular car, so that will actually be counted into your debt-to-income ratio. Now, it may not matter. I mean, you may be in such a great position that even if you bought the car ahead of time before buying your property, you still wouldn't even hit 20%. You may just, Megan, be in, you know, one of those great positions. So, you know, in that case, it might not matter as much, but I definitely think, you know, going to have a conversation with a mortgage broker first before you make any decision is such a great idea because, again, they're going to be able to give you the best guidance so that you make sure that you line up those purchases in a way that it's not going to infringe on the range of price of house that you can actually purchase. A lot of people say, well, how do I find a good mortgage broker? You know, I think that we, you know, from all the HGTV shows and even just I think what we think when we're buying a house is like, okay, we just go out and we find a realtor and, you know, we start looking at houses. And then once we find a house that we want to buy, we put an offer on that house and then we figure out the money piece. Well, I like to tell people gently to do it in reverse. And the reason why I tell you to do it in reverse is when you go find a mortgage broker first and you can get that range of house that you can afford, A, you're not going to go out and start shopping and looking for a house that's more expensive than what you can afford, which just helps with the gentle heartbreak. So you don't walk in, like, see your dream house and then you look at the price tag and it's like, oh crap, we actually can't afford this house. So that's one of the main reasons why you do that. And also, they give you something, the mortgage broker will give you something called a pre-approval letter. And basically what that means is they've already looked at all your finances and they looked at your debt-to-income ratio, all of the behind-the-scenes numbers, and they're giving this letter stating that, you know, this is the range of house, price of house that you can actually afford. And that letter becomes really powerful
when then you go and find a realtor and you start putting in offers on your house, because the realtor can include that letter with your offer. And so the person selling the house can look at that letter and go, oh, okay, this person or this couple, they are pre-qualified, so they can actually afford to buy the house. We don't have to worry that the deal is going to fall through or anything like that. So it becomes a real powerful piece of information, of data for you to be able to have when you're making those offers on the house. And then I think you can rest easier because you know, hey, they've already done all the behind the scenes numbers and we could actually afford this house. We know what the payment probably will be and we feel comfortable with that in our monthly budget. And if you just can't figure out how do I find a mortgage broker, you know, go on Facebook, go on social media, ask your friends, ask some local realtors. They'll usually have a ton of suggestions. I usually say talk to 2 people, 3 people if you want, but talk to a couple of people so you could get a feel for, you know, how they work and if your personalities are going to align. But I think that might be the best piece of advice for you, Megan, is before you do anything, just get a little information behind the scenes. I'm inferring based off the information you gave me that you're going to be in a really good position regardless, even if you did buy the car. But I just want to make sure that you are in the best position possible before you do actually go out and buy the car. So it's May-ish, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, and we're kind of rolling into peak wedding season, at least here in the U.S. Some argue that it's kind of always peak wedding season. I got married in November, so definitely wasn't one of those June brides, but I think it's always a good time to talk about weddings and where you should spend your money, where you maybe should think of not spending your money. And I was recently featured on an episode of the Bridechilla podcast with host Alicia, and we talked all about my wedding day suggestions that I had for her, answered some of her wedding money questions. So I thought it would be great to have Alicia come on our podcast and talk about her wedding do's and don'ts so that you can, again, make sure that you're using your cash in the best way possible. And as she says, she is hilarious. She is not a wedding planner, ironically. She's actually a comedian and a TV presenter, but she learned a lot of lessons through her own wedding and through seeing her friends get married. And she thought, you know, there aren't really any podcasts out there about weddings. Why not start a wedding podcast? And she infuses in each episode, like all of her humor. They're just funny. I mean, even if you aren't planning a wedding, I think you're going to find so much value from this episode. One of the funniest things that she talked about was not overspending on things like chair covers. She calls them chair condoms. And she's just got some hilarious advice for you. And so even if you're a dude listening to this episode, I know that you are going to at least get a few laughs out of this. So before we head into the interview with Alicia, a quick word from our sponsor. I want to give a big thanks to our podcast episode sponsor, Brooklinen. You may have heard me talk about Brooklinen before, but I cannot stop. You know, if you think about it, we spend a third of our lives in our bed on our sheets. So sleeping on comfy sheets, it makes such a difference. And I have been sleeping on Brooklinen sheets now for about a few weeks, and they're awesome. Seriously, breathable, so soft to the touch. It's really like having this luxury experience, but without the big markup price. And Brooklinen, they were founded in 2014 by a millennial couple, and they wanted to create the most beautiful and comfy home essentials without all those crazy prices, thank God. And Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world with over 20,000 five-star reviews of happy sleepers just like me. They have so many colors and patterns to choose from, so you can mix and match, and that's just what we did. We got gray sheets, this really cool gray color, and a striped duvet cover just to spruce up our bedroom a little bit. You have to do yourself a favor. Seriously, try these sheets because my Brooklinen sheets, they're the best, most comfortable sheets I have ever slept on. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for you. You can get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code MYMONEY at brooklinen.com. And Brooklinen is so confident that they're going to offer you a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code MYMONEY at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code MYMONEY. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads.
Make earning a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
So, Alicia, I was just recently on an episode of your podcast, Bridezilla, and I figured, you know, there's no better time to talk about weddings and money than now. And before we dive into all the juicy details, I have to figure this out. So you're not a wedding planner, but you host a podcast all about weddings. How did this happen?
It was sort of a comedy of errors, which is how mostly my career has occurred.
You and me both. And I,
yeah. You got to go with it. You just got to go with it. My husband, Rich, and I moved from Australia to London. And prior to us moving, my career was primarily in television. I was an on-air TV presenter and I was a stand-up comedian. I still am, both of those things. But it's not like I've died and it's not happening anymore. But
still funny, I promise.
Yay, it never goes away. Maybe it does. So we moved here and then I really just couldn't face going back to comedy clubs and starting from scratch, which is not, I mean, true stand-up comedians would be going, well, that is a failure. You should be going out and doing 5-minute gigs in the middle of the night in a city you don't know. But I was listening to a lot of podcasts at the time and thinking we were 1 year into our marriage and I was really sort of in the zone when we were planning. You know, I can feel the foundation, you know, you look back and feel the foundations of what I created, I suppose, with Bridezilla. But I thought it's weird that no one was really talking about weddings, because to me, if I had heard a wedding podcast when we were getting married, it would have been soothing and supportive. So I just set up a mic on a ironing board in the bedroom and thought, I'll just give it a crack. I'll do 5 or 6 episodes and see if anyone listens. And that's now 320 episodes later. It just went. So I'm not a planner, as you said. I don't really have any actual, I'm like the peripheral person of wedding planning. I'm the lay person. I'm the friend that tries to investigate and explore. And it's just sort of taken over my life.
I guess that's a good thing, right? I mean, it's like this whole other passion that has sort of emerged. And what I love about your podcast is you bring that humor. And I think, you know, especially with weddings, planning weddings, we can get so like stressed out, especially the women listening to this episode. And, you know, so having like some humor in there, I mean, because my God, it's just a party. I realize that, you know, it's the union of two people, but the marriage is everything that comes after the wedding.
Absolutely. And I think that's the big thing that is the driving force. And I suppose the ethos of Bridezilla that's developed over the last 3 years is really the message of it's just a party. It's a beautiful party. It can be an expensive party, but also we get so focused and almost obsessive and crazy about details that aren't really that important. And to me, that's where what I've, you know, the community that have been built from what I've been talking about is so empowering, just to see people really take it and run with it and sort of say, you know, we don't need all this extra stuff and we should be focusing on our relationships and making sure that we're building a strong, you know, marriage over
what sort of things we put on the table. I mean, yeah.
Yes, yes. And are there any like favorite episodes that stick out for you?
Am I allowed to swear these on your podcast?
Yes, I'm thinking that you're going to probably say the favorite episode that I have. So go for it.
Okay, so it's the Fuck It Bucket, which has become this like underground go-to episode, which I'm delighted that people enjoy it. And it's just basically me talking about all of the pressure and DIY projects that you just want to, you have that with the great hope that you'll finish, but then the glue gun's still sitting there 3 months later, and expectations and all these traditions that you don't want to necessarily follow. You put them all in the fuck it bucket and you light the match and watch them burn. And it seemed to really work for people. And now my community all refer to the FIB, and they've, you know, they don't even write fuck it bucket anymore. They took a bit, what are we going to throw on the FIB today? And it's great. It's really great that it worked for people.
And I think, you know, my personal opinion, I think you could have a fuck it bucket for everything in life. You know, if we're going to talk about money, we could have one for, you know, all of the things that, you know, we've thought we've done wrong, or maybe, you know, we've spent money on something that we knew we shouldn't have, or, you know, all that crap that builds up over your life, you know, put it in there.
Yep. Oh, I think the fuck it bucket is a transitional bucket for all stages of your life. And it's, I think, one of those things that once you figure out, you know, and it's all metaphorical, obviously, but when you sort of go, oh, I could do this, I can get rid of this, and it's not going to make any difference. And, oh, yeah, okay, we don't need to do that. Or, you know, and we don't need to follow the pack on everything or feel bad if we're not. That's what's great. And I agree with you. Certainly when it comes to money and how we deal with money, there are lots of inhibitions and things we can just chuck in the fucker bucket straight away and just people feel much better about ourselves.
Certainly. I'm a big fan of that. But so let's roll up our sleeves a little bit. You know, there's this expectation, I think, maybe you talk about this on the podcast, you could provide some insight of future brides and, hey, even grooms that are listening, that, you know, they say they want to have this like dream wedding that's perfect, you know? Mm. And we know that the reality is that stuff's going to go wrong. And, you know, maybe some things are, like you said, you know, they're not going to work out. But, you know, what do you hear from guests on your podcast and different advice that you give to about, you know, how do you find that equilibrium between, you know, having this dream and perfect wedding and then the reality of actually having the wedding?
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. I think for a start is I think this idea of perfection is so broken, and I get really sad when I see it all over. I mean, we're being told to be perfect 24/7. You know, we're on Instagram, and this is, I'm talking about women especially, of how we should look and how we should behave and how long our hair should be and we should be thin and all this stuff. We're just bombarded with this shit all the time, which is just so infuriating. And so then you get to your wedding and then you were given this message of perfection and the best day of your life, and this is going to be the greatest moment. And I often say, you know, I find that offensive in the sense that my wedding day was great, but I really hope that I have 50 more best days of my life to come. And
please, sort of, yes, right? You know, at least 50.
Like, yeah. And why should that be the pinnacle of our existence, that it's a party and it's saying, yeah, I met this rad person and I love them, but it's not like the be all and end all of our existence. So that for me is something that I grabbed it and ran with really early on in the podcast and now in my book. And I really try and just really empower people to ditch the concept. And also with guests, I think a lot of them now are into my language and stuff, and rarely do people come on the show and ever talk about the perfect and best day and all this sort of stuff anymore. But I do think that we place expectations upon ourselves, and this is not just with weddings, this is with careers, this is with money and achievement, that can be really hard to sustain and maintain. And sometimes we've just got to cut ourselves a bit of slack and go, you know what, every day we get up and we hustle and we do our best and we're healthy and alive and we go to sleep and we try and do it all again the next day. So I think with wedding planning and looking at Instagram and Pinterest and being surrounded by all this media of, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I think, Shana, the whole thing is there's a lot of pressure from the moment you get engaged, and it can be really challenging to overcome that for some people.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I mean, there's no doubt that – weddings are expensive. You're in London. I'm in LA. But I think this is pretty much a universal thing. You know, there's a lot of money. And, you know, sometimes we have unrealistic expectations about, you know, how much our wedding is going to cost or where that money is going to come from. What are some of your, you know, favorite wedding do's and don'ts, you know, especially when it comes to money and how much cash you're going to spend on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the start, and this is a step that so many people miss, and it feels so obvious to say it, but it's you get engaged and instantly, and I'm sure you experience this, people, like complete crazy people, will go, when are you getting married? Where's the venue? What are you wearing? Who's going to be invited? How many people are coming? Blah, blah, blah. And you're like, I don't know. We literally got engaged 28 seconds ago and you're asking me all these questions. I have no answers for you. But because people jump on, and I think there's this pressure to go and book something and make something, so you've got something to say to these idiots that keep asking you all these questions, people jump into things. And from a financial point of view, I think this is a real no-no, because they start putting deposits down and committing to things before they've even had a conversation, like a real, like, hardcore get a glass of vodka, sit down with your partner and say, what are our expectations of the day? How much do we think is reasonable to spend on this event, and what's our timeline? And it's funny that some people just jump in and start to do it and then start to make budgets up, you know, 3 months down the track when they've put all the money down and they're like, oh my God, how do we pay for this? Because you're right, it's crazy expensive. And also you're shelling out a lot of money at once. You know, vendors want deposits. They want to, you know, ensure that you're going to pay. And that's a pretty big commitment. So I always advise people that without that conversation, and it can be a really frank conversation, and also it really helps cement your teamwork sort of mentality of wedding planning, and it not just being, and I definitely say bride chillers for, you know, same-sex couples, straight couples, everyone. But to say that it's the woman's day and it's our day that, you know, we should have all the say, I find it offensive.
So what about some ways that people could maybe cut corners, if you will, on their wedding day? I mean, we know that, you know, things like food and venue, alcohol are, you know, kind of the biggest expenses, but have you come up with any tips or anything that you've learned yourself about, you know, different things where maybe you're like, ah, you know what, you don't have to do it this way. You could save money here and, you know, put it towards something else.
Yeah, I think the big things are working out your priorities and what's important to you. And that might be, you know, you want kick-ass photography, but you don't really care about, you know, high-end booze. And that seems, you know, quite straightforward in the sense, but I'm sure you experience getting quotes from various vendors. You're like, what the hell? Oh my gosh. When you start getting the first quotes back and you're like, if I what? How much? And so I think it's really prioritizing what parts of the day are premium parts that you want to invest in, and then also then stepping back and going, actually, do we need to put favors on the table? This is one of my favorite ones to get rid of. And you look at people giving I don't know, all this crap that people put on tables, but honestly, I've only, like, I eat in the cab drunk on the way home. Like, I don't really, it's like, I don't care about this stuff. But we look at, you know, it's an artisan jam that someone's made, and you're like, that's lovely, but that costs you $6 each, and there are 100 people here. Do the math. That's an easy way to ditch, you know, something that really no one will miss, and no one's going to come away from your wedding going, I can't believe they didn't give us jam. It's ridiculous. Or, you know, I have this real grudge with chair covers and the fact that chair covers are, you know, basically chair condoms, that it's just something to, it's just disgusting. But it's to go, again, no one's going to remember if your chairs had covers on them or not, or probably going, they were vile. But there are things that I always sort of say to my listeners, what are the things you remember from weddings that you loved? And then think about all the other things that people put money into that didn't resonate with you at all or didn't impact your day. And to me, that's the easiest way to start hacking at the stuff that people just throw money at, actually really doesn't account to making anything more fun or enjoyable.
Yeah, when I got married, we had a backyard wedding. Actually, the place we lived was right on the water, and it was like a really small, condo community. And all of our neighbors chipped in. They did the drinks, they did the appetizers. One was the DJ, and so it was such a great event. And then, we were in such a beautiful setting already that we didn't have to add much as far as decoration.
Yeah.
And, we hired an actual like pizza truck to come and make like wood fire pizzas. And so we just, we're sort of in the vein of like doing things differently. But, I think that when you really just sit down and think about like, what do you really want your wedding to look like? Like not all this fairy tale stuff, not all this, crazy, expensive, no one's going to remember the stuff, but really like, what is your vision? And, is that financially feasible? Like, can we actually do that? Because like you said, most people just want to come to a wedding and sure, they want to see you get married, but they just want to come and like have some good drinks, have some good food and have some fun. And that's really, I think, the extent of what most guests' expectations are. But, especially in the US here, we've created this culture of, if you're not spending $30,000 to $40,000 to $50,000 on your wedding, then you're not having a good wedding. And you look at what the stress that couples go through of trying to finance this. If they're not getting money from other parents or whatever, and they're going into massive debt like right off the bat. And it's so stressful. So for me, it was like, okay, what are the things that are important to me? And then how can I echo that in a realistic way? Our wedding only cost $2,700 US. So, it wasn't
amazing.
It was money, but it wasn't, a down payment on a house.
Crazy money.
Yeah.
And look, you make some very good points about, again, prioritizing your spending and also not getting sucked into the vortex of this, I quite frankly think, bullshit average that they shop around every year. And if you look into, and I'm talking about when they say they, as in the wedding media, and probably, I'll go into it. They say every average wedding is $50,000. And then you look at where these surveys come from. And this is my wedding Illuminati angle, but I truly believe it, that they are financed by wedding magazines who have really high-end suppliers and, advertisers that make money out of saying buy a $10,000 dress and you need to have these special cars to deliver you, even though no one will see you get out of that special car. And which is another – let's come back to transport. But the whole idea that we have normalized as a society these averages that, in fact – I think if we went and talked to five of our friends each, I'm pretty sure none of my friends would have spent anywhere in that sort of vicinity. And these are sort of middle class working people. These aren't, they're not doing super budget stuff, but they're not super rich. That is normal. That's a weird thing to say. But, educated average people that would think that spending $50,000 on a wedding is fucking crazy. So I think we've been conditioned to go, oh, that's so normal. And then, as you said, people make crazy sort of leaps into debt. And one thing I just hammer home all the time is to say, I would far rather wake up with a hangover the day after my wedding than debt regret. Imagine paying off a wedding for the next 5 years instead of, as you said, putting a down payment on a house or paying off your college tuition or making good investment choices. So it's a 7-hour party. I just can't fathom how people go into debt for it.
Yeah. And you're so right about those numbers. They're put together by all of these wedding magazines and companies that are obviously going to financially benefit for you, spending that kind of money. And even, when you hire a wedding planner, like the wedding planner is not going to be like, I'm not sure you should spend that much money on your chair condoms, as you call it. That's not the wedding planner's job. And so, you really have to have some like personal ownership over this.
I think, I will come into bat a little bit for some of the wedding professionals that I think from the beginning of any relationship you have with a wedding vendor or a planner or a coordinator, you have to be honest with them about realistic budgets, because so many people get caught up in it and
go, yeah, I want all that stuff. And then, you know, the planner's job is to do what you ask. And without you saying, actually, that is $20,000 over budget, you know, they're not Nostradamus mind reader people, but they're also there to help you. And I think if you are giving them realistic budgets and expectations, they will make that happen for you. But I think a lot of the time people get worked up and start, you know, pinning their brains out and deciding they need all this extra stuff and living beyond their means, which I know we do as a society anyway, so much. But for me, it's just this idea you've got to step back and go, we have limits, we're going to stick to it. And it's a budget. We all know how to stick to a budget. Hopefully.
Hopefully. That was great. We're like mind readers.
Ugh, that's a whole other topic.
Right? Exactly. And so, you know, what about some tips for people who are just, you know, they're either in the planning mode or they're, you know, soon to be married and they're feeling those like bubbles, those waves of stress. How can you figure out how to have fun with this?
Yeah, well, I think don't let wedding planning become the only thing that's happening in your life. I think it's really easy to get completely, you know, worked up and obsessive over it. And that's not me dissing. It's just saying if you're working a full-time job and then you're coming home and you're trying to tick things off your list, it just becomes a part of your life. And then, you know, it's, I always sort of liken it to when I used to do a bit of acting and you'd work on a play or a stand-up comedy routine where I do festivals and then it was your whole existence. And then you wake up the day after the show closed and you're like, oh my God, what the hell do I do with my life now? So if you can sort of really step outside of yourself a little bit and go, you know what, we're going to go for dinner and not talk about the wedding, or I'm going to go and talk to friends and not talk about the wedding because I don't want to hear it all the time. You know, I think it's a healthy thing. And then also just to be able to realize that in my book, I talk, there's a chapter called It's Okay to Feel Like Shit. And I think just to acknowledge that whether you're planning a wedding or you're planning to buy a house or you're going through the process of doing something, you don't have to be happy all the time because we're human and we have ups and downs and the seasons of life occur no matter whether you're planning a wedding or you are, you know, doing something else. So I think just to acknowledge that people have mental health issues, people have things happen in their family, people lose jobs, stuff happens. And they're not going to, it's not going to not happen because you're planning a wedding. So I think to acknowledge it and just accept that shit will go down and you're going to be cool with it and life will go on is really a good move.
Yeah, I like that. That's great advice. So is there anything that you've learned now being a year married that maybe has surprised you?
So we're about to hit our 8-year relationship mark, 6-year wedding anniversary in a couple of weeks. And I think the one thing, especially when it comes to money, that, you know, Rich and I had very different money stories growing up. We had very different outlooks on how to use our money and save it or not. And I certainly came into our relationship with some STDs, sexually transmitted deaths, Shana. And, you know, and look, I had a bit of credit card debt from a past relationship that I hadn't paid off. And Rich had never had a credit card and was very responsible with his saving and spending. And I think it was confronting for me because I felt sort of shame coming into the relationship with debt. But also I think it was challenging from him because, with, you know, being previously, and he's not here to defend himself, but I'll say potentially a bit judgy about people having debt with credit cards and stuff, that it was irresponsible. And I think it's taken us, you know, we paid the debt off. He jumped in and we worked it for it together and got rid of it, which was a blessing. And I felt so much relief not having those windowed envelopes appear in our, you know, mail every week. Not week, I wasn't that in debt, but, you know, when they would arrive. And but also, you know, trying to work together to establish a joint money story and figure out what saving means to us. And I'm still the person that will take a holiday in 2 seconds over putting money in a bank. I'm a complete travel freak, and I will always say, oh, we can do it, we can go next weekend. And then Rich is like, oh my God, for the love of God, we're trying to save. But an opportunity comes up and I'm like, let's go. So I think we're still at the stage of, even 8 years in, of going, ugh, is she ever going to change? Is he ever going to change? I don't know. But that's being in a marriage, in a team, I suppose. It's trying to evolve and work together to be on the same page occasionally.
Yeah, occasionally. I love that. That's such a good point that you just made. It is like a constantly a work in progress. You know, just when you think you have something figured out, then you're like, wait a minute, I actually don't have that figured out.
And I think also, look, I'm a freelancer. I work in TV and I run the business. And for me, and this is sort of how I got into the credit card debt with the last relationship, you know, work would come and go and I wasn't buying shoes and dresses on the credit card. I was, you know, supporting myself while I was in and out of work with TV production. Now, as an adult now, later, 10 years down the track, I, you know, certainly put a bigger part of my wage aside for times that work isn't coming up. But I think that there's a difference between the 9-to-5ers that just have always worked that sort of job, and then you meet creative freelance people who you know, you sort of gel with and go, oh yeah, you think about money the same way I do. I don't really panic when I get sort of low, whereas Rich would be like, oh my God, what, this is bad. The alarm bells are coming. And I'm like, we'll be fine. Everything's going to be fine. So that's marriage.
It's
as well.
All okay.
Everything's fine. Oh my God, what is she doing to us?
I love it. All right. So last question. What's just, if you had just one piece of advice to future bridezillas, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to really think about what a wedding and marriage means to you and really keep that in mind when you are in the height of insanity and worried about the color of napkins and that no one's going to show up because no one's RSVP'd, and always to have that little safe space in your brain to come back and go, you know, a year ago I'd never even considered that I would be stressed about a napkin and that it's quite silly but also relevant for the time in my life. But when you're a year down the track and this is all done, you'll think back and go, why the fuck did I worry about a napkin? It doesn't matter.
So tell listeners where they can find your podcast, where they can find your book and all of the other goodies.
Oh, well, thank you. Look, if you just search for Bridezilla wherever you find your podcasts, there's a big back catalog. There's over 300 episodes, Shana. I feel like people would get sick of binging on me, but, you know, welcome. And also if you are interested, if you're planning a wedding or if you've got a friend getting married and would like give them a great bullshit-free wedding planner, I've got the Bridezilla Survival Guide and the Bridezilla Field Guide, and they're a duo of books that I've published recently, which really just tell it like it is. And they are gender neutral, so everyone is welcome to buy them without feeling like we're always being told about brides and grooms. And you can buy them at bridezillastore.com.
So if you're planning a wedding or you're in the middle of complete wedding stress and chaos, you're going to want to head over to the Bridezilla podcast because, as you've just found out, Alicia not only is going to dish a lot of really good information, she's going to dish it out to you in a completely hilarious way. I mean, I'm listening to her podcast and I'm, of course, not planning a wedding, but I just think it's so much fun listening to everybody's thoughts and opinions and ideas on the topic around getting married. Kind of makes me want to have another wedding to Jeff. Maybe I'll just use the money for something else. As always, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Shauna Game. And if you love this podcast, I'd totally appreciate it if you shared it with your friends, shouted it out on social media. We have a link in the show notes. You can head over there to leave us a review on iTunes or on any podcast player where you're listening to this episode.